From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
We ain't allowed to gag, inmates. It's against the rules. So you didn't see that happen, understand? Mind you, he didn't say nothing about stripping this girl down to her underwear, beating her, shackling her. His only concern was that the sheriff not find out about the gagging. That was my first day on the job as a deputy sheriff for the Harrison County Sheriff's Department in Mississippi.
A tattletale eyewitness in Mississippi, a radio play based on the story of Andrea Gibbs, a deputy sheriff who blows the whistle on abusive prisoners in Mississippi. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Regular listeners to Democracy Now! Know that we've spent a good amount of time dealing with the issue of police brutality. Well, recently I saw a play called A Tattletale, Eyewitness in Mississippi, that I thought should be seen by a much wider audience. As I thought about it, I realized, well, I couldn't ensure that more people would see it, but we could have more people hear it. Because it's a one-woman show, I realized it would be easy to adapt for radio. Actor Judith Sloan portrays a muckraking Southern woman with a sharp, ironic wit, riding a roller coaster through an incestuous Mississippi legal system made up of frightening, odd, and quirky characters. A Tattletale, the story of a teenage runaway turned deputy sheriff turned whistleblower, bears witness to coming of age in the face of hypocrisy and lawlessness. In 1989, Andrea Gibbs, sworn to uphold the law, blew the whistle on her superior officers for the brutal treatment of juvenile offenders in detention centers and prisons in Mississippi. In 1993, her efforts culminated in federal investigations and closings of prisons that were deemed barbaric and unfit for human habitation. Before we go to the show, A Tattletale, first we'll go to its writers, Warren Lehrer and actress Judith Sloan, who will actually perform the show. Tell us what this is all about.
I was in Mississippi in 1992 performing some of my other work, and I went down there partially to perform and also because I was interested in creating a Southern white female character who wasn't simply a bigot, the kinds of things that I see mostly in the mass media, and that went beyond the stereotype. And the way for me to do that is to really do research, and I went down there with a lot of tape and a good tape recorder, and I didn't know I was going to find this particular story. I wasn't looking for a story about the jails or prisons. I was really looking for character. And I met Andrea Gibbs when she was in a somewhat desperate situation needing help because she was afraid for her life. And I taped her for about 5 hours. And at the same time, Warren was at home in New York, and he had been in the middle of a project called the Portrait Series, about four unusual men. And I knew he was starting a new project in the Portrait Series on women. And I thought this woman would be both a perfect subject for a book and also a theater piece. And beyond that, we realized that she needed help. And so we brought her up to New York and started helping her with legal advice and trying to find people that could really help her. And we've known her now since 1992.
And at the time when we first met her, it was shortly after she blew the whistle. She was a deputy sheriff in a youth detention center in Mississippi and blew the whistle on abuse that she witnessed down there. And through getting to know her, we've known her now for 5 years, we discovered that she herself was a teenage runaway and had come up through the criminal justice system, first as an inmate, and then became a law enforcer, and eventually set up a hotline and
that helped. Also led to hearings that happened in Mississippi that were looking into jail hangings and suicides that were fairly prevalent in the statewide jails and prisons. So we've seen her through all of this range of living as well as the story changing as we knew her. And one thing that we just want to make sure that people are aware of is this play is inspired by Andrea's story. Names have been changed except for hers. Some things have been fictionalized, and
We try not to let the facts get in the way of the truth. But all the incidences that you hear or will hear are based on real experiences that she witnessed.
Right.
And it's very much a character piece. What happens to a citizen, in this case a very funny and complicated individual, who comes to a workplace wanting to do good and then is confronted with all kinds of abuse that's taking place on her job? And what do you do when you're confronted with that on the job, and what choices do you make?
And we'll find out what one woman did. Writers Judith Sloan and Warren Lehrer, they are authors of the play A Tattletale, Eyewitness in Mississippi, performed now by Judith Sloan. The play takes place in Andrea's ramshackle house by the railroad tracks in Gulfport, Mississippi.
Well, how I come to Mississippi, see, I followed my mom down here. Something compelled mom to come to Gulfport, Mississippi. Beaches is nice along the coast. A person could afford to live here. That's why lots of folks is drawn to it. Plus, I think, Mom, she needed to be somewhere different than where she was with Danny. In Mississippi, this was different, all right. I come after her because I was a runaway for 3 years. Left my home in Tallahassee when I was 13 years old. My stepdad, when he got mad, his temper swelled up so big. The more it swelled, the smaller that house got. 2 days. After my 13th birthday, I woke up at 5 in the morning, I stuffed some clothes in a laundry bag, put some lipstick on, and I snuck out the door. If I stayed one more second inside that house, I was afraid I'd stop breathing. Outside, there was all the air in the world, all the cross ventilation I could ask for. I got locked up in a bunch of different states. Florida, Ohio, Maryland, California, Wyoming. I got caught for ripping off drills and stuff. Oh, come on, how many of y'all stole something when you was 12, 13, 14 years old? Gum and makeup? I know you did. Well, I'd pawn them drills for $5, and I was notorious in them youth detention centers. I bet they're still talking about me in this one place in Tallahassee. We didn't have no rolling papers inside, so I used a page of the Bible. Revelations. Said all will be judged for what they had done. I was incorrigible. At least that's what they put down the first time they booked me in. Didn't even know what the word meant, but I liked the sound of it. By the time I was 16, I was clear across the country in a California kitty jail. That's when I got up my nerve to call home. Pre-recorded message said that the number was changed to a new number with a 601 area code, which turned out to be Mississippi. I mean, one night, my mom, she told Danny to go out. She told Danny that she was going out for a pack of cigarettes. She never come back. He probably didn't even notice. As soon as she told me she ditched him, I come back to live with her. I put her through hell. Well, y'all don't let that noise bother you. It's just a freight train. It's right outside my door. Most people, when they first come to visit, they can't believe it. You get used to that after a while. It's like breathing. I remember kidding Mom, hey, it ain't all that bad. We got the best view of the railroad tracks money could buy. Me, I don't need a water view. I just like the smell of the sea air all over everything. Anyway, the water is filthy. All it's really good for is dreaming. You know, in Mexico, they look out at that gulf and they dream of coming up to the USA. Here on this side, you look out at that gulf, and you dream of running away to Mexico. I went to Mexico about 9 months ago, tried to find myself. All I managed to do was lose my shoes. Where was I? Oh, yeah, me and Mom. Well, I come back to live with Mom. And after 3 years of living on the street, I didn't know what to do with myself. All of a sudden, I'm going to go to high school? I don't think so. Well, Mom, she was turning over new leaves almost every day. She quit smoking. She wasn't going to be anybody's homemaker anymore. And she starts studying for her GED. I thought, hell, if she could do it, so can I. And then Mom decides, the day we pass our GED test, to go down and apply to the Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College. I thought, hell, we both decided to major in criminal justice. Mom said, it was because we had criminal minds. My goal was to work in a youth detention center because I knew how it felt when that heavy metal door slammed shut at night. Plus, I was thinking about some things that people done for me when I was locked up, especially this one cop, Officer Sebald. I thought one day I'll show her. I'll work in a place like this. I never really thought of myself as a, you know, I mean, I just figured it was a short-term thing. Don't care if you got three eyes and a tail. If you're a 14-year-old runaway girl trying to figure out how to survive, sooner or later, some guy's going to offer you some money. And if the guy ain't all that bad-looking and you're hard up for cash, which you probably are, you might just figure, well, it's no big deal. That's pretty much how I got started turning tricks. Keep from stealing. Get a motel room from time to time. But then when I got busted for it, and Officer Sebald wrote down her report that I was a prostitute, that kind of stung me. Officer Sebald, she's the one who got me to call home. Well, after 3 years, I graduated from the Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College with my degree in criminal justice in May. And in October, I got a job for the Harrison County Sheriff's Department. I had my badge, I had my gun, I had my PR-24. Y'all know what a PR-24 is? Well, I'll show you. This here is a PR-24. Now, most of y'all, you know this as a billy club or a nightstick, what have you. But the official term, I mean, what they teach in criminal justice school, what this goes by, is PR-24. When I first heard what PR stood for, I just about died. Public relations. This here is a public relations stick. Ain't no kind of public relations I ever heard of. They never did teach us what the 24 was for. I figured it was 24 hours a day. I never did have to use it on anybody, but I liked having it on my hip. I took my boyfriend Billy down a couple, three times just to practice. There's very specific rules that they teach you on how you can or cannot use a PR-24. See, there's a nerve on the side of your leg. You go like that real fast, that takes them down. And then there's something called Georgia State Takedown. Someone's coming at you like this with the arm up, and you go like this up under the arm. You flip that around, you got them down. Then nothing they can do. Did you catch that? Pay attention. Someone's coming at you like this. You go like this up under the arm. You flip that around, you got them down. Like I said, there's certain areas that the teacher you ain't supposed to go for. You got your red zones. That's basically anything above the neck, the head. What else is up there? Below the waist, the groin area. You got your yellow zones. They teach you ain't supposed to go for those. That's your chest area and your kidneys. And then they teach you that you got your green zones. That's your arms and your legs. You can go for those if you have to, if the subject resists. There I was, a cop, like I had died and come to heaven in a blue uniform. I was a deputy sheriff, Bernie Fife and all that, for the Harrison County Youth Detention Center. It was going to be my job to take care of the kids, book them in, book them out, run security check, facilitate wash-up, fingerprint them, stuff like that. At least that's what Sheriff Gordon Bond said anyway. First day on my job, I got teamed up with a Deputy Aubrey Green, who introduced me to Deputy Jake Higgins and Clarence Buford Jr., the lieutenant in charge of the Youth Detention Center. Good-looking guy with a birthmark side of his neck, shape of Texas. Aubrey introduced me to some of the kids in the day room. Now, most of them had that F-U look in the eye, which I knew all too well. I wanted to shake the attitude off them right then and there, but I was cool. I just said, how y'all doing? Little after lunch, Clarence and Jake, they book in this 16-year-old girl who was not very happy to be there, to say the least. Can't remember exactly what the charge was, but I know it was a misdemeanor. She said some things to Clarence that must have blew his pride right out the window. She was cussing and swearing and hollering even after they locked her in a cell. You motherfucking white pig, get me a cigarette, get me a pillow, you motherfucking pig. Anyway, Clarence and Jake, just as I went to see if I could calm the girl down, they pop open the door to her cell. Aubrey Green was standing right beside me. They start calling her nigger, whore, bitch. They grab a hold of her hair, and they start hitting her head up against the cinder block wall. Then they stripped her down to her panties and her bra. Then they took shackles, shackled her feet together, and they handcuffed her hands to the bar above her bed. During this whole time, Clarence was punching her across the face with the flat part of his palm. Aubrey Green was standing beside me. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I wanted to go tell my boss, but I couldn't, because my boss was the one who was doing it. And then Clarence, he told Aubrey to go down the hallway, get him some pants out of the laundry room. Aubrey raised his eyebrows at me, went down the laundry room, and come back with his old orange uniform in his hand. He said, "Clarence, these is the only pants I could find, and they're dirty." Clarence said, "Well, I don't give a damn." And then he told this girl, "If you don't shut up, I'm going to gag you." It's about that time she told him he had a little dick. He probably does. And then Clarence and Jake, they took them dirty pair of pants. They put the dirty crotch in her mouth. They tied the pants legs behind her head tight. I was just standing there thinking, "Oh, my God. Oh, my God." Right after it happened, Clarence, he brung me and Aubrey into his office. Aubrey, he's black. Clarence and Jake, they're white. Not just white, they're like white with a lot of red around the collar. He said, "Now, y'all, sit down." And we sat down. Now, y'all didn't see that. We ain't allowed to gag inmates. It's against the rules. So you didn't see that happen, understand? Mind you, he didn't say nothing about stripping this girl down to her underwear, beating her, shackling her. His only concern was that the sheriff not find out about the gagging. That was my first day on the job as a deputy sheriff for the Harrison County Sheriff's Department in Mississippi. I got into criminal justice because I wanted to teach them kids some rehabilitation. And instead, I'm standing there first day on my job and I'm watching a crime take place. One of the first things that they teach you in school, in criminal justice schools, if you see a crime and you don't do nothing about it, that makes you an accessory. Then again, if you say something about a crime perpetrated by your boss and your boss just happened to be the law, you're going to be one unemployed witness to a crime nobody's ever going to believe you seen in the first place. After a couple weeks, I start working myself a groove in that job. Tried having as little contact with Clarence and Jake as possible. Then one afternoon, I was patrolling the hall with the keys in my hand, and this skinny little 14-year-old kid named Jeremy Campbell, who was booked in for stealing a six-pack from the Circle K, which I'm sure he never did get to drink. Well, Jeremy, he come up behind me real quiet, real slow. I thought he was trying to get my keys. I said, "Jeremy, don't you ever come up behind me like that." My only regret was Clarence overhearing me getting on Jeremy's case. He called him out and started hollering on him. "Look, you little son of a bitch, you're not going to escape from my MF'n jail." And then he took Jeremy by the throat, threw him up against Coke machine, started smashing him across the face with the flat part of his hand, which I recall him telling us one day, "Flat part of the palm won't leave no mark." When I told Aubrey Green about Jeremy getting beat up, he said, "Well, Andy, ain't no use going to the sheriff, because the sheriff is best buddies with Clarence's daddy." Well, hold on a minute. Jail watch. Oh, hi, Mrs. Harris. No, that's all right. No, I can give you the number again. Mrs. Harris, listen, I want you to know that I filed your complaint with the Justice Department. I went ahead and filed it with the state, but I don't think it'll do a damn bit of good. No, well, listen, Mrs. Harris, his number, that ain't right. It's Reverend Brown, and his number is 497-6029. 29. And don't forget, Mrs. Harris, they have to let in clergy, even if your son is in lockdown. That's right. Now, you call me back, and you let me know what happened, all right? Well, that's what I'm here for. Bye-bye. So, since Clarence Jr.'s daddy was best buddies with Sheriff Bond when Clarence Jr. come looking for a job. Sheriff just opened up his drawer, pulled a pop badge out, and deputized him just like that. Clarence was such a bad deputy, they made him a lieutenant in 3 days. And they put him in the kitty jail. I said to Aubrey, well, if we can't go to the sheriff, then we got to start writing down everything we see in a journal.
You're listening to A Tattletale, Eyewitness in Mississippi, performed by Judith Sloan about the life of Andrea Gibbs. When we come back, we'll hear the story of what happens next here on this holiday special on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! This is Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, The Exception to the Rulers, as we continue with this radio play, A Tattletale, Eyewitness in Mississippi, performed by Judith Sloan about the life of Mississippi Deputy Sheriff Andrea Gibbs.
Instead of avoiding Clarence and Jake, I tried earning their trust. I think for a while there, Clarence even took me as one of his confidants. Like one time, y'all ain't gonna believe this, but it's true. One time, we was working the late shift, and Clarence starts bragging to me from behind his desk about something he done not too many people would do. Andrea, I'm gonna tell you something if you promise not to tell anybody. I'm thinking, what the hell is he gonna tell me? Andy? It's a secret. I fucked a goat. I said, well, Clarence, at least you ain't lonely on Saturday night. Naturally, I thought he was kidding. I said, come on, you did not. He said, no, I mean it. I fucked a goat. And then he put his leg up on the desk, pulled his pants up, and he showed me a hoof mark where the goat had kicked him. Can you imagine? He was proud of it. A couple years after that, we was staking him out for Primetime Live, and that's when I seen that Clarence lives across the street from a goat farm. Hey, y'all. I wonder what the lieutenants sit around bragging about in your town. Sam was from Nicaragua. He would talk real fast, da-da-da-da-da, like that. Clarence just thought he was crazy, so he whopped him upside the head, stripped him down to his underwear, locked him in his cell for 2 days. Turned the air conditioner on full blast. This was January. We had to transport that child to the hospital with pneumonia. I know. This all sounds like, my God, how could this go on? Some people listen to my story. They look at me, they say, now, Andy, honey, you're lying. You read about this in a book. If that kind of thing was happening, we would have heard about it. And there I am telling them about it. And they're saying, it can't be, we would have heard about it. Well, you must not be listening, because I am telling you. But, sweetheart, things like that don't happen in this country, and if it did, we would have heard about it. Well, I am telling you about it, Peabrine. After 8 months, my journals was piling up at home. I documented all the kids that was left for dead, deprived of food, beat, molested. Got to the point where Aubrey Green, he couldn't stomach it no more. So he went to the sheriff's office and he said, Sheriff, you should see the way Clarence is doing them kids. Sheriff said, Green, you got an attitude problem. And he transferred Aubrey to go work at the Gulfport Jail, which is an adult jail. About a month after Aubrey was transferred, This 14-year-old girl named Tanya was booked in. She always had a nicotine fit. Cigarette, cigarette, cigarette. She was booked in for drawing on somebody's license tag with a crayon. Long story short, there was another deputy named Carl Gibbons with an E, G-I-B-B-E-N-S, went down the hallway in the middle of the night and received oral sex from this girl in exchange for giving her a cigarette. It was a Dorel. She give him a blowjob, he give her a cigarette. This was like 2 o'clock in the morning. At first I thought nobody could be that stupid. A cop go down the hall in the middle of the night. I mean, the man had the mentality of a common household teaspoon. I'm not saying he's dumb, but if he fell out of the stupid tree, it hit every branch on the way down. Long story short, they end up firing him, but they didn't press charges. Soon after that, I got a call from a social worker named Mrs. Mary Beth Logan, L-O-G-A-N, says she wants to get together with me to make arrangements to bring Tanya over to the mental health center so Tanya could talk to somebody. And I thought, this is perfect. This is who I need to talk to, a social worker. I couldn't sleep no more. I thought, Andy, you're no better if you keep your mouth shut. So I thought, I'm going to get together with this social worker, and I'm going to tell her everything that's going on inside this jail, and then she is going to tell me what I need to do. So we're making arrangements to bring Tanya over to the mental health center so she could talk to somebody, and I asked Mrs. Mary Beth Logan if I could have her home phone number in case we need to talk outside of work. And she said, oh, I don't have a phone at home, but you can get me through my daddy. You know who he is, don't you? Oh, you know, Gordon Bond, the sheriff. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, I'm thinking I am going to spill my guts to the sheriff's daughter. And then I'm thinking, wait a minute, they are calling in a social worker who just happens to be the sheriff's daughter? It just happens to be a coincidence? I don't think so. I mean, something is wrong here. Well, after the Tanya incident, that is when I made up my mind that I was going to have to do something. All the months, what was I waiting for? I called up Aubrey Green. And Aubrey Green, he starts telling me, Andy, you should see things over at the Gulfport Jail. Makes youth detention look like Sunday school. Nickname for this place is the House of Pain. Aubrey said they got these cells over there that they call the hole. There ain't nothing in it. Just a hole in the middle of the cell. No lights, no bed, no toilet, no running water. Anything you do, you just got to do in your hole and live with it. And down here, it's hot in the summertime. No ventilation. Aubrey said he's seen them throw prisoners in there for weeks. Oh, and another thing he's seen. He's seen the same group of inmates getting trucked in and out of the jail every day in white uniforms. Sheriff was running a catering business out of the jail. A lot of the inmates was in for violent crimes, too. One guy was an axe murderer. And there they was, all over Harrison County, sharpening carving knives, serving up hors d'oeuvres. Aubrey said he heard one inmate used to pee in the food every so often. He's seen the food budget for the jail, which included money for 2,000 frilled toothpicks, pigs in a blanket, cocktail napkins. Only good thing about the Gulfport Jail is Aubrey start making friends with these two other deputies, Otis Watkins and Russell Thompson, and they are all sneaking around with journals, with cameras. And they're all thinking about coming forward and blowing the whistle. Between the three of them, they had seen so much stuff. Just listening to them would make you as scared as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. Aubrey said, Andy, you're the straw that stirred the drink. I'm one white woman. They are three black men. But four of us? We're thinking four officers of the law, all in good standing, coming forward together. We are simply going to be formidable. We're going to rock the heads of the Mississippi Gulf Coast.
Andrea and the three deputies work on compiling documentation, but before they're ready to go public, the sheriff gets wind of their plan.
I mean, we was knee-deep in
what? So in a panic, I called 411, and I asked if by chance I happened to be an ACLU in Mississippi. I called the man on the phone. I was just hysterical. I started telling about us four deputies being afraid for our lives and the blowjob and Priscilla Pomeroy shooting off her mouth and the three cells in the Gulfport jail. And he said, well, you need to call the cops right away. And I said, I am a cop. All four of us are cops. Are you following all this? Well, the next morning, the four of us, we get in my car and we drive 3 hours north to Jackson, Mississippi. And we have a meeting with a volunteer lawyer from the ACLU. She listens to what we have to say, and then she advises us to go public. Next thing I know, we're giving a press conference. There's the Sun Herald, Jackson Clarion Ledger, WLOX, the radio, TV. We tell our story, we give details, we name names. Next morning, our story is front page in the Sun Herald, third page in the Jackson Clarion Ledger. Well, that evening, me and Billy, we's eating pork chops and mashed potatoes watching the 6 o'clock news, and there is Sheriff Bond saying the four politically motivated deputies are now ex-deputies. That's what it says on my license tag on my car now, ex-deputy. I couldn't believe I'm watching myself get fired on the 6 o'clock news. All my dreams go up in smoke on the 6 o'clock news. Lies, 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 saying we didn't follow the chain of command. Politically motivated. Well, hell, he refused to listen to us with a lawyer's present. You see, Sheriff Bond, he was in the middle of a re-election campaign, said that his opposition put us up to it. Like, we cared which redneck becomes sheriff of Harrison County. I wasn't even registered to vote. That's when I put up my sign, Barney Fife, first sheriff. Well, County DA, he had to set up a grand jury to look into our, quote, allegations, whether he wanted to or not. First thing they asked me when I went to testify, who are you voting for sheriff? What are your views on corporal punishment? Why do you hate Officer Buford? Why do you resent the sheriff's department? Oh, and I found out later that Richard Head, the DA, what was his mama thinking when she gave him that name? Let me ask you something. If you was a mama and your last name was Head, would you name your son Richard? I don't think so. Well, I found out later that the DA, Richard Head, he told that grand jury that I was a gay devil worshiper. Well... Jail watch. Who is this? Oh, is that so? Well, you know, that don't sound like a very Christian thing to say, if you ask me. Oh, well, my caller ID unit said that your number is 624-7955. Caller ID, never heard of it. It means I know who you are. Oh, you'll be hearing from me, too. Bye-bye. Most of the calls I get is legitimate, desperate people calling for help. You get your hate mongers, you get used to it after a while. It's like breathing. More than 30 people testified at that grand jury to the beatings that was going on in the jails. When all was said and done, they come down with one indictment. And guess who that was against? One of us. Prisoner testified against Otis Watkins for 5 minutes. No backup witnesses, no physical evidence. And the grand jury said that that was enough evidence to indict him. Well, the sheriff, he got the judge to put a 6-month gag order on us fire deputies. Oh, a gag order, in case you don't know. It means that your First Amendment right to free speech, your God-given right to tell your own story, is suspended. Whatever impulse you may have to go out on the street and scream your guts out with a megaphone has got to be gagged. Sooner or later, you lose your voice. And if you're anything like me, you ain't known for being short on words. So the only thing left to do when you open your mouth is fill it with food. Anything you can find, you stuff into your mouth. Once in a blue moon, you go out with some friends, but all you could think about the whole time is that quart of ice cream that's sitting in your freezer. You go home, you eat half of it, and then you put it back, and 10 minutes later, you eat the other half. But it's okay. It's just you and the spoon. When there's nothing in the fridge, you order in. Spicy chicken, dirty rice, jambalaya, pepperoni pizza. There's plenty you can get that won't break the bank. First few bites, you think you're the happiest person alive, although you don't taste a thing. That's what could happen to you when you're living under a 6-month gag order, at least if you're anything like me.
6 months to the day, I went down to that courthouse. I wanted to see the testimony of that grand jury, and guess what? It wasn't transcribed. There wasn't no record of it. It was like it didn't even exist. That's when my cat Justice got the flu. That cat was running 105 temperature. I never had an animal have the flu before. I had myself in tears thinking Justice is gonna die. It was like this awful metaphor in my mind. Justice dies in Mississippi again. I took my cat, I took my dogs, I took my boyfriend, and I moved half hour down the coast to a little bit of beach town named Pass Christian.
Andrea hides out in a remote little cabin and is initiated into the Wicca religion. After a year, she moves back to Gulfport. As soon as she gets back, five police officers, including Clarence Buford Jr., burst into her house, threaten her, and tear the place inside out.
After they bust into my house like that, I come unglued every time I heard a noise at night. Start checking under my car. Never drove alone. Me and Billy, we put bars up on all our windows. And then he moved his rifle from the closet to under the bed. If that thing ever went off, it would have been the only action going on inside our bedroom. 2 years of being afraid to go outside and not feeling safe takes a toll on a love life. I didn't feel nothing for him anymore. Truth is, I was afraid of being by myself. Not because I was afraid of being alone. I was just literally physically afraid to be physically by myself. That's when I put up them broken mirrors on that live oak tree out my front yard. It looks like a real nice decoration. Did you see it when you was coming in? You know why I put them broken mirrors up like that? It's there to reflect their hate back at them. Oh, and I think it's working too, because you know what? 2 days after I put the mirrors up, Mom, she was over at the library. She was getting her master's by then, and all of a sudden her eyes fell on a book called The Whistleblowers. She said, Andy, honey, you got to get that book. Sure enough, in the back of the book, there was a telephone number for an organization for whistleblowers in Washington, D.C. I called the number, and I start working with a lawyer named Velma Dupre, who just happened to be born and raised in Biloxi, Mississippi. Wasn't no accident that Mom's eyes fell on that book. Wasn't no accident that Velma Dupre just happened to be born and raised in Biloxi. And it wasn't no accident that she sent our information to a primetime life producer who just happened to be a reporter 35 years earlier covering the civil rights movement in Mississippi. I mean, primetime live, that is one program I always managed to watch. So this big deal producer, Scott Bernstein, he come down here with a big old camera crew, and he was interviewing us deputies and interviewed kids in the jail and the sheriff and the grand jury foreman, and they had all these hidden cameras on their caps, which was really cool. March comes along, and I'm wondering when our show is going to end up on TV. April comes along, and I'm starting to panic. Everyone in town knew that ABC News was down here doing a story on the jails in Harrison County, and Andrea Gibbs was the one who brung them. And then, first week in May, there's an ad in next week's TV Guide with a big old picture of a sheriff's badge for Primetime Live saying, after Thursday night, Sheriff of Harrison County's going to need more than this to hide behind. Keep in mind, TV Guide's just about the most popular magazine around these parts. Soon as that ad come out, I start getting death threats over the phone. At first, it was primarily racial. You nigger-loving bitch, we're gonna get you. I caught more hell for standing up with three black men. They all thought I was sleeping with them. Like, you can't be friends with a black man unless you're screwing him. And then my phone would ring. I pick it up. Nothing. 3-4 times in the middle of the night. I'm grocery shopping one day, and the youth court judge was following me down the aisle. Oh, I can't prove that he was following me, but there I was in canned peas, and he's right there in tomato paste. I'm picking out eggs, and he's next to me in butter. I'm getting chopped meat, and he's right there getting ham sliced thin, giving me dirty looks. Then 3 o'clock Sunday morning, a pickup truck drives across my yard. Me and Billy thought it was going to come through the bedroom wall. Mom said, Andy, honey, I think it would be a good idea if you get out of town when that primetime TV show airs. I know a woman in New York you could stay with for a week. I thought it was a good idea to get out of town.
But New York City, I could get shot at up there. Plus all them fancy people. I got all new underwear and I got my nails done.
We will continue with a tattletale eyewitness in Mississippi, inspired by ex-deputy sheriff and whistleblower Andrea Gibbs in just a minute. By the way, if you'd like to get a copy of today's radio play, you can call us at 1-800-735-0230. For a cassette copy of today's Democracy Now!, that's 1-800-735-0230. We'll be back in 60 seconds. You're listening to a special holiday edition of Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman, as we continue with A Tattletale, Eyewitness in Mississippi, a play by Warren Lehrer and Judith Sloan, performed by Judith Sloan, about ex-deputy sheriff Andrea Gibbs.
So I flew up to New York, and this friend of Mom's, Sarah, she picks me up at the airport. She's got short, dark hair, dark eyes. She's wearing a black T-shirt, black jeans, black boots, black nail polish. She got maroon lipstick and seven little earrings in each ear. I'm thinking, she's gonna take care of me. I squeeze into the front seat of her little car, and she tears out of there like a maniac, shifting gears every 2 seconds, zipping in and out of lanes, talking a mile a minute, giving me the grand tour of the Brooklyn Queens Expressway. Everything seemed kind of ugly to me, but like endless ugly, which was like nothing I ever seen before and kind of great in a way. And then Sarah says, look to the right. And there was the Manhattan skyline, like a picture, only dirtier than a picture, but like beautiful dirty. And then she said, well, there is the UN, and there's the World Trade Tower, and there's the Empire State Building. I couldn't tell the difference between one skyscraper and the next because I was too overwhelmed by the whole thing, and I was too scared and upset that I come all this way for protection only to get killed in a car accident. Oh, I like Sarah, don't get me wrong. Oh, I liked her even more when she was through giving me the white-knuckle car ride from hell. I would have smoked a whole pack of cigarettes right there if I wasn't hanging onto the door handle for dear life. Well, 10 o'clock that evening, me, Sarah, and her husband, who looked just like her, except he had two earrings in one ear, and swear to God, looked like a nail coming through his right eyebrow. Well, we sat down on their tiny bed, and we watched the primetime show. And there is us deputies telling our side of the story, and there's the sheriff denying the whole thing, and then they break for commercial. And I'm thinking, this is great. They're going to come back with evidence and nail them. They come back from a commercial, and Diane Sawyer is interviewing Sigourney Weaver. I couldn't believe it. I mean, Sigourney Weaver.
Who cares about Aliens 3 when people's lives is in danger down here? I mean, these media people, they come swooping down here with all their lights and their cameras, and or they fly you up to New York or out to Chicago, and all their talk of 30 million people watching. Maybe you seen me on one of them TV shows. You know, I was the one with the words, blew the whistle on fellow police officers, written across my chest in white letters or underneath my double chin. One show, they had me as, thanks, Mississippi is a racist state. Like I ever said that. Where'd they come up with that? And then once they put on their show, they leave you back in your crummy life to pick up the pieces. How many times have you seen something on Dateline or Primetime or 2020 or any one of them shows? Or maybe you saw the show about the whistleblowers and you go home and get up next morning. You think, I wonder what happened to that woman. I wonder if someone killed her last night. Oh, my God. Y'all should not be letting me eat these chips. You know, I just got 20 more pounds to go. Anyway, Sarah, she brings me to this big old meeting of women activists. There must have been 400 or 500 women there. And they was like calling questions and seconding motions and yaying and naying. Like it was the House of Parliament. I mean, at first, I thought it was very weird. Like, what was I going to say to these people? I don't know what I said. But you know what? Them people, they sent down over 300 letters to the governor of Mississippi, Board of Supervisors, and the local newspapers, saying they met with Andrea Gibbs, and they knew about the whistleblowers. And you see what it did was, I start feeling protected. It let people down here know that other people out there knew who I was. And before I left New York, I met with Ben Cheney. You know who he is? A little brother of James Earl Cheney, what was killed in Mississippi in the 60s. You know about that case? Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodman? Well, I didn't hardly know anything about it at the time. Me and Ben, we talked for 3 hours straight about Mississippi. And before I left, I said to him, I don't know what I'm going to do when I get back home. All I know is I'm going to help people that's being brutalized in the jails, maybe set up a hotline. You know, sometimes words come spilling out my mouth and I'm as surprised as the next person by what I'm saying. And then once I hear it, it's like a dare. Any of y'all believe in reincarnation? I do. You know what I think? I think I'm a reincarnated civil rights worker what was killed in some podunk jail in Neshoba County, and now I come back to get him. There was definitely something besides the beach compelled me and Mom to come here. Didn't take long before I start getting these calls over my hotline about young men and women that's dying in the jails down here, supposedly hanging themselves. First call I got like that was from a lady named Lucretia Jenkins. She said, "They killed my son." I said, "I don't do murders, ma'am." Of course, I was curious. Lucretia told me, "My son wrote me a letter from the state penitentiary saying he'd seen something he wasn't supposed to see, and he was afraid the guards was going to get him." And 2 days later, police show up on the door of my trailer and tell me that my son hung himself. They won't give me the autopsy report. Would I help her do a second autopsy before they bury her son? You know, when I set up my hotline, I was thinking about filing complaints with the police, making a fuss, giving people advice. I wasn't thinking autopsies. Tyrone Jenkins was the first autopsy I ever seen. Nearly dropped the video camera a couple times. Have any of y'all seen a body that's already been autopsied? It's split down the middle like a filleted chicken. It's horrible. State coroner's report said Tyrone Jenkins had braided together a bed sheet, tied it around the cell of his window, sat down on the bed, tied that bed sheet around his neck, and hung himself by leaning forward on the bed. Well, my pathologist, Dr. Gutworth, he explained to me that no matter how depressed the mind may be, the body has its own built-in reflex to live. And as soon as you start to choke, that reflex kicks in. That's why they hang people from up high on gallows or suicides use a chair. So that reflex to live can't kick in. You can't hang yourself sitting upright on a bed. Plus, Tyrone, he had bruises all over his body, like he decided to beat himself up before he decided to hang himself. By now, I have seen more autopsies than I care to think about. I got this one case. Young white man, 22 years old, picked up for drunk driving, calls his mama, said that she has to come pick him up because they beat him so bad he couldn't breathe. State coroner report said that that boy died of a heart attack. That he had scar tissue around the heart. He must have had a lot of little heart attacks. His mama said he never did have a heart condition 22 years old. So we went in to do a second autopsy, open up the body, and the heart wasn't there. Liver, lungs, kidneys, all the other organs was there, but the heart, state coroner said, disappeared. How the hell does a heart just disappear? No matter who I was sending information to, the governor, the FBI, the Justice Department, nobody was doing any kind of follow-up investigation. So I called Ben Cheney, and he was coming up with some of the same kinds of cases because he was spending time in Mississippi. Between the two of us, we had information on over 47 suicides that was happening in the jails, and 24 of them was young black men. Well, me and Ben, we got together at a Chinese restaurant in Jackson, Mississippi, and that's when he tells me this idea he has about having statewide hearings like a truth commission. How would I feel about being the coordinator of witnesses? I popped open my fortune cookie, and it said, "You will rise to meet new challenges." So we raised our beer glasses, and we toasted to putting on the best hearing since Watergate. I hate to admit it to y'all, but I barely knew what Watergate was at the time. I said, "Here's to it," and guzzled down the rest of my Bud Light. Statewide hearings was held in March of 1993. Panel was like an all-star cast of civil rights organizations, Southern Christian Leadership Conference, National Council of Churches, NAACP. A lot of people come to testify. Mothers come to testify about their sons and daughters that was beat or died in the jails. Forensic people and clergy people. And us four deputies, we finally testified in the light of day. Of course, it didn't hurt that CNN was there and at the Atlanta Constitution and the New York Times, which I'm sure had something to do with Janet Reno coming down and investigating some of the jails. Federal Justice Department come down, investigate the jails, and in 1994, they shut down four county jails, cited 18 others for reforms. Oh, we've had some small victories down here. They said the conditions was barbaric, unfit for human habitation. That's their words, not mine. And the other day, I was driving by that youth detention center, and I seen them kids playing volleyball outside. And there ain't no more beatings going on in there, as far as I know. I could sit by my shrine and stare out the window, and I get fixed on that live oak tree across the street or a dewdrop hanging off the side view mirror of my car. I just stare at it until it disappears, and then I disappear. I don't know where I go or what becomes of me, but in them few moments, none of this exists. Everything here on my shrine has got something attached to it. Darlene, she won me that little moose at a carnival in New Orleans. You press on it, a tear comes out the eye. That's water. Billy, he got me this peacock feather back when we first got together to add an extra thrill when we didn't need anything extra. And then, of course, as soon as things start drying up between us, we never thought of using it. Ain't that the way things are? You get something when you don't need it, and then as soon as you need it, you never think of using it. Scott Bernstein, he got me that ram's horn when I got my honorary law degree. Oh, yeah. City University and New York Law School give me an honorary law degree, me and two judges. I'm a doctor of jurisprudence, but don't worry, I won't make y'all call me Dr. Gibbs. More things change, the more they stay the same around here. Feds come down and shut down the jails, and then the counties got more money to build new ones. So now, we got more new jails, more inmates, more cells. Same bunch of people is running things. My phone keeps ringing just the same. I don't hide. My handle on my CB radio is Tattletale. I never ask for any of this, you know. Sometimes I go for a walk on the street or down by the beach or one of the casinos, and I think to myself, why am I all tangled up with these people? Look at it here. It's beautiful. Sure, it's hotter than hell in the summertime, but I love the wisteria and the fresh-cut grass and the fabulous sunsets. And some of the people is very, very nice. In fact, Some folks could kill you with kindness around here. Even the sheriff. I thought he was kind of charming when I first met him. I could see why people vote for him. He's got that charisma thing. You know, at first glance, things seem pretty normal around here. Like if you was to come for a holiday, you might have fun and want to come back. You know what I do from time to time? I close one eye, and I pretend I ain't from here, and I don't know the things I know. And for about 2 seconds, everything seemed picture perfect. You know, if I was a stupid, ignorant, selfish daughter of a bitch, with no conscience, even knowing all I know, I might be one of the happiest girls this side of the Pascagoula River. But for better or worse, I am who I am, and I've seen the other side of things, from locked jail cells to autopsy rooms to the dark space between Clarence Buford Jr.'s two front teeth. If I was writing a book from scratch, like a novel or something, I wouldn't make this stuff up, because I'd be afraid people would think it was all highly unlikely, highly unlikely. If anything happens to me, y'all make me a promise, won't you? Promise me you'll tell my story. Oh, I know you will. I know you will. Hey, listen, y'all. You feel free to make yourselves at home. I shouldn't be too long. Feel free to raid my fridge.
You've been listening to excerpts from A Tattletale, Eyewitness in Mississippi, a play inspired by the story of Andrea Gibbs, teenage runaway turned deputy sheriff turned whistleblower, written by Warren Lehrer and Judith Sloan, performed by Judith Sloan. A Tattletale just had a month run in New York City. For information about bringing the play to your area or any other inquiries, you can call 718-729-3668. That's 718-729-3668. Or you can email muriel2000@aol.com. That's muriel2000@aol.com. Also, we thought we'd give you one more number, the Center for Constitutional Rights Police Brutality or Misconduct Hotline. That's 1-800-764-0235. That's 1-800-764-0235.
The name of this tune is Mississippi Goddamn.
If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can call 1-800-735-0230.
And I mean every word of it. Alabama's gotten me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about me. Pressure much longer. Somebody say a prayer. Alabama's gotten me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi. Goddamn. This is a show tune, but the show hasn't been written for it yet. Hound dogs on my trail, school children sitting in jail, black cat cross my path, I think every day's gonna be my last.
Democracy Now! Is produced by Dan Coughlin, technical director Errol Maitland, executive producer Julie Drizzen.
All gonna get it in due time.
If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can call 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening.